One day you'll understand that getting what you want isn't what's important. Making the most of what you have is.
In 2022, Ty West released his long-awaited A24 horror film that had been in the works since 2020. Sandwiched between Everything Everywhere All at Once and After Yang, X premiered on March 13th, 2022 at South by Southwest, and then on theaters on March 18th.
I'm nothing like you. Once and for all. You're kidnapping, murdering, sex fiend. I'm a fucking star!
There had been a lot of buzz about the movie, especially since Kid Cudi had produced it with Ty West and was starring in it, along with Jenna Ortega, Brittany Snow, Martin Henderson, Owen Campbell, but the star of the show was Mia Goth, who had been in a bunch of movies, including her first role in Lars von Trier's Nymphomaniac, the remake of Suspiria, and A Cure for Wellness. Almost always cast in smaller supporting roles, X became Mia Goth's breakout role.
You're the most beautiful woman I'd ever seen.
Not anymore.
Always.
Tell me I'm yours.
A slasher film about a desperate and sleazy group of 70s strippers and burnouts who aspire to make a porno film only to be hacked up and murdered by a sinister elderly couple whose shack they rented out to film in. Mia Goth played both Maxine Minx, a young runaway dancer who aspires to be a star, as well as the old woman Pearl who hacks everyone to death in a horny, sex-crazed, violent frenzy. An honestly minuscule budget, $1 million, filmed not in rural Texas, but in New Zealand, brought back a return of $15 million at the box office. It's impossible not to see all the references to Texas Chainsaw Massacre here, one of the most iconic early 70s slasher films, made on an even smaller $80,000 budget in 1974. Even with inflation, that comes out to about $500,000 in today's money. The film was a bit of a grab bag, including the psychobiddy genre, which we've talked about previously, horror films about crazy older women who have become violent and unstable, Psycho, which gets name-dropped, Boogie Nights, Hardcore. Adding to the self-referential meta-nature of the film is a line where a young aspiring film director talks about how you can hide a low budget through avant-garde editing. And that definitely describes the stylistic nature of Ty West's films here. Immediately after filming X, Ty West wanted to keep working with Mia Goth, and so they decided to flesh out the backstory they had worked out for the Pearl character into a prequel filmed on exactly the same sets in New Zealand, using the crew from Avatar: The Way of Water, as they were already in New Zealand and had already quarantined, and largely using New Zealand-based actors and actresses. Tonight's film, Pearl, a prequel to X, where a young Pearl lives with her German immigrant parents on the same farm in 1918.
I'm not staying on this farm!
Filming in the wake of the pandemic in 2022, the film takes place during World War I and the Spanish flu epidemic, which gives it a very alienated, closed-off feeling.
I know what I've done. The bad things. Terrible, awful, murderous things. I regret them now, but I liked how they felt. I wish I didn't, but I did.
Rather than the more muted 1970s aesthetic tricks of X, which often make the film feel like you're watching it being filmed from a 1970s camera with faded film, grainy textures, and scratches. Pearl is colored as if it's Technicolor. Every color is incredibly saturated, just a bit off even, giving this world an unnatural, magical setting and playing with the aspect the critics talked about with X, that Pearl as a character has incredible pathos and is even sympathetic at times. Gives her a backstory where she's both deeply miserable living on this farm in the middle of nowhere, destabilized by a world conflict, followed by a massive pandemic that sees her husband march off to kill Germans.
Do people like you ever feel this way? I figure you don't. You seem so perfect all the time. The Lord must have been generous to you. He never answers any of my prayers. I don't know why. What did I do? What is wrong with me? Please just tell me so maybe I can get better. I don't want to end up like Mom, or I want to be dancing up on the screen like the pretty girls in the pictures.
And completely alienated from both family, who are German immigrants, as well as from her community living miles away. Her mother is stern, completely cold, and terrified that being German will have them treated like an enemy fifth column, and her father has been completely disabled by the flu and is now living the life of an invalid. Pearl also looks at the dark side of wanting fame, the ruthlessness of a woman trapped in a miserable place, and the connection between wanting to be loved, like a film star or a dancer, and the brutal psychopathic behavior when that isn't possible. giving the Pearl character both a trigger and a reason for her insane behavior in X. It was filmed for $4 million and was released in September 2022, just months after X was released, making $10 million at the box office.
All I really want is to be loved. I'm having such a hard time without it lately.
Anyway, before I introduce the panel, please like this video and subscribe to the Movie Night Extravaganza YouTube channel. Hit that bell to get notified whenever we're streaming.
Scott?
Also, we are now monetized, so if you have any pressing questions during this live stream, send us a super chat, which helps me keep the show running and which I am obligated by international law, human rights law, to answer. We also have a Patreon, patreon.com/movienightextra. All of our after parties are on there forever. We also have a new Discord and a Letterboxd HQ account, so those are two more places to follow along with us. Links are in the description. Okay, let me introduce the panel. Christina Oakes is streaming on Twitch at Cosmopolitics, twitch.tv/cosmopolitics. Also recently joined YouTube, she's on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Cosmopolitics. Send her some subs on Twitch, and send her a coffee. Katie Baldassaro is the co-host of Movie Night Extravaganza, a director, writer, and actress who wrote and co-directed Girl in the Basement, along with appearing in horror movies like The Purge Election Year and The Devil's Nightmare. You can catch her voice acting in the podcast series, The Starwell Foundation, and she is the host of What If I Don't Like It, and on TikTok at Movie Runtime. I, of course, am your host who's trapped on this farm and is going to be a fucking star, Forrest Miller. I'm sorry, I do not do maggots. I'm not getting trapped on this farm. Yeah, so this is the first time I've seen these three movies. I watched them like back to back to back. For this episode.
Yeah, I had watched them independently, and I'd never watched them like going through like this all in a row. And it's kind of interesting. Did you watch them in the order they came out, or did you watch them in the chronology of the timeline in the movie?
I watched them in the order that they came out. I watched X on, I think, Wednesday. I watched Pearl on Thursday. I took a break, and I watched Anchorman, which was way more fun because when we talked to Adam McKay, I want to talk about Anchorman. But then I watched.
I want to talk about the other guys.
Yeah, well, there's so many good Adam McKay movies. But so I took a break and watched Anchorman because I've seen most of the other movies a million times. I don't think I've seen Anchorman since I was a kid. And then I watched Maxine on Sunday night. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know. Pearl's my favorite of the three. Like, Pearl, hands down, I think is the best of the three. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, I was going to say this to you guys, and then I said, you know what, we should probably just do this on air. I think that Pearl is like my favorite of the three because maybe there isn't as much to reference as there is in the other two, because like they spend so much time in X doing like the whole like, oh, this is like a fun 1970s thing, like 1970s porno, like doing the whole stylistic elements of it. And then in Maxine, they spend so much time like reminding you it's the 80s and being like, ooh, the Night Stalker's out there. And I think the fact that there isn't as much to actually reference, right, like, because a lot of what they're referencing is actually like the 1930s with the Wizard of Oz, or like the 1950s with a lot of the more like strange, strange kind of vaudevillian aspects of stuff, and like the Technicolor kind of was all through that period. So I think maybe this movie actually benefits from having not as much to actually like remind you that this is the time period that we're talking about.
I would almost argue that it's referencing the Wizard of Oz so much that that's what's filling in that. It's not so much a time period as much as it is like there is some heavy Wizard of Oz imagery. And I would figure that the both of you would like this one the most because you guys love the Wizard of Oz.
I do love the Wizard of Oz. I mean, the Wizard of Oz like Scarecrow sequence is kind of, it's so heavy handed, right? And so weird and out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. But like,
yeah,
I still liked it. I was like, I was watching it in the beginning. I was like, what the fuck is... Oh, is she really gonna... She's dry humping that scarecrow.
Well, I almost thought, and maybe this, Christina, you can expound on this, because I only Googled it a little bit, and I'm sure you know. I thought, oh my God, so this is a Wizard of Oz thing. Did Dorothy ever have a thing with the actor who played this straw man? oh, the Scarecrow, and she did, like, her and Roy Bulger, right?
Yeah, well, the thing, what happened was, is that if you listen, if you pay close attention to the end of the movie, she says to the Scarecrow, I think I miss you most of all. Because apparently in the original script, they were supposed to have a thing, her and, the Scarecrow's real name was on the farm, but apparently Dorothy and him were supposed to have a relationship, but they kind of scrapped that because I guess the age difference. So that's why I guess in the original, they maybe filmed those scenes. That's why in the original cut, you see is her saying, I think I'll miss you most of all out of all of them. Just the Scarecrow was like the one she was closest to.
Yeah, and the Judy
Hulk,
Garland.
That was his name, Hulk, yeah.
Judy Garland had an actual relationship with Roy Bulger where they said, he was married and very, very committed to his marriage. But if they had met before that, he was there when she died. They were very, very close. And it felt like, oh my God, this could just be a scandalous scene. Like it felt a little bit like the Saltburn grave fucking scene. But it also felt like every single time I stopped and went, what the hell is going on here? I found that they were referencing another piece of media, another piece of art, or some sort of cultural touchstone. And I found that density so interesting in a horror movie where people, you know, like it could just be so reductive, but it's really interesting.
I like that
I want to show the outfit on Solo layout since you came on the
outfit. Christina's outfit.
Hello. This is your Maxine costume. I was gonna do that in the very beginning, and then we had the mic issue.
Some technical issues.
Dressed woman
with the freckles and everything.
So I got the freckles.
Done my gym and
but go on. Sorry.
Now I lost my train. Oh wait, no. Also, there was a lot of Follies references too with the dance scene too. Very very sick, like very much Folly choreography from back in the day. There's just a lot of references to like the beginning of the silent film era, because you see him, the projectors played by our future Superman, he shows her, you know, some of the pre-code, like nasty films that were around at the time that were not so mainstream.
Some of those nasty French films that he found in Europe as a bohemian.
Yes.
And what I found so interesting about that dance sequence, which could be so throwaway, is it repeats in all three of the movies. You see young Maxine also do it later on. Like there's a cohesiveness through all three pieces where not only are they referencing outside of themselves, homaging horror they like, they're tying them together in a better way than some, like Pumpkinhead doesn't bother to keep the franchise together that much.
Well, they also have the X Factor thing, right? Like, I mean, you went on a deep dive with that. Like, you know, X Factor obviously referencing X and then doing the XXX Maxine as like the third one. Like, that imagery and that thing, like, you know, just the concept of X Factor kind of resounds through as a through line between the three of them.
Yeah. And another thing, too, is that if you want, I mean, again, we cannot talk Pearl without talking about the other two films because of how Pearl sees Maxine herself, or what could have been, considering the likeness. And that's why in X she's like, leave that one alone, she's special, she's different than the blondes that got killed or whatever. So it's like, you know, Maxine is what Pearl wanted to be, you know, she wanted to be a star, you know. And another point too that Forrest mentioned in the intro was when this took place, the Spanish flu had been going on for quite some time now. And this film is like a metaphor for COVID. It could have came out at a perfect time, considering how isolated Pearl became, how lonely she felt, her husband's gone. You know, she's trying to seek solace, you know, somewhere else. She's under, you know, she's told to work on the farm and be under her mother's, you know, German thumb and take care of her father who's an invalid. Like, so many things that just scream, you know, this film came out at the right time.
The whole idea of like immigration, right? Like, because you know, they're not just immigrants, they're German immigrants, which, you know, if you know anything about the history of World War I, which I'm sure you guys do, like, not only were German immigrants at some points like relegated to camps if they thought you know that they were going to be some kind of like enemy fifth column, they got so heavy-handed with it during the war that like internment became like their go-to thing for World War II too. But there's also like that kind of alienation where you have one foot in one world where like your parents are, you know, your parents are the immigrants and they come over here and they're working hard and everything, and then you're kind of an American person and you're stuck in between these two worlds where your parents are like, well, don't trust anybody outside right now because your husband's literally out there right now killing Germans. Like, yeah. If the parents hadn't left, they'd be killing, you know, people in Germany that were like, you know, their parents, her parents' friends and family for all they know, you know, like that's why the mother like clamps down and says like, I've heard enough about people killing Germans today. And so like, there's that level of alienation too, to the whole thing.
Yeah.
And there's alienation from the sense of purpose. I think all three of these movies talk about the X factor, which is in algebra stand-in for unknown. It's basically something that cannot be calculated. And we talk about what makes someone famous. It's unknown. You can be as talented as the best actor out there, and there's this unknown tangible thing that actually is whether or not you're going to be famous. And so we have this deeply religious Pearl character who really, really believes that because she has suffered, she deserves to have a wonderful life afterwards, which is when we start to see that it's like the Joker incel thing. But the reality is that's just a mix of magical realism and stoicism gone wrong, where instead of thinking that you'll be happy because you've done good things, you feel like you're going to get rewarded because you've done good things.
Yeah.
And like, no, it's nihilistic. It's so nihilistic. Life doesn't owe you shit. And if we're talking about deserve, Pearl, you don't deserve shit. You're fucking horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the hot tool girl. All it took for her was the fourth most popular podcast right now. All it took for her was to say, you got on that thing. And then it went viral. Now look at her.
I believe in you, Christina. You could have said that and made millions. I believe in you.
That's like, yeah, sure. Maybe having a meltdown on stream might help. I don't know. But like, that's one thing my sister and I discussed. They're like, she's like, you know, I'm a teacher. I'm already suffering because of Trumpism. I'm going to suffer even more because of Trumpism because I'm a teacher and I'm barely middle class. She's like, you know, all these, you know, girls on TikTok and influencers, you know, they go viral. They get famous like that. And look at the two of us, and I'm like, I don't know. When is it going to be our turn to have a life worth living?
This film, I noticed, because I just watched it again right before we went on, which, you know, now I'm disturbed all over again. I don't do maggots. Like, I do not. Oh. Maggots freak me out more than, like, pretty much anything else.
Like a terrifying horror movie?
The Gift of the Magi?
The Gift of the Maggot. That's the gift that keeps on giving, by the way. If you give somebody maggots, you know, it'll just keep.
It's literally quite true. Prolific.
I noticed this time around, a shot that I really, really liked in this. She's praying and she's like, you know, telling God, like, please let me be famous, all this stuff. And then as she goes to bed, and like behind her, there's a shooting star, which means she missed the shooting star. You know, like it looks, it's literally saying like her shot that even if she had it, like she doesn't deserve it. And it's been blown by the fact that literally there's like the Walt Disney style shooting star behind her. And it's like, if she had been praying 5 minutes, you know, 5 minutes later, she would have maybe like met the shooting star. I appreciated like the thought behind that even.
Yeah. You can't always get what you want.
Such an American ideal to be like, well, if you just focus and try as hard as you can. And then she gets to that audition, and the truth of the matter was she didn't have the genetic hair even necessary to be, who gives a fuck if she could dance? Like, there was no shot. She some people live never even getting the one shot, and that is something that people cannot wrap their minds around. Like, nothing is given. This is such a nihilistic movie.
The sister-in-law, right, that has everything handed to her, that's rich, that everybody adores, that has like the natural blonde curly locks, like she's the one that they're like, well, we've had so many, because I what I got from it anyway is like, they've had so many brunette girls that have kind of danced and done like the kind of homely, like you know, whatever dance, and then they're like, we're looking for a blonde girl, like a rich girl, to lead the entire pack of girls that are going around. And it's like, Jesus Christ, it's that little of a thing. Like, they can teach you to dance, probably.
She doesn't even get the part. Pearl just gaslights her into believing. It's like, I'm like, yeah, she's pretty and blonde, but then she's got the curves and she's got the figure. They're probably looking for a leggy.
You don't think she got the part? Blonde. You don't think
no, I don't think she did. I don't think she did. I think she said did. That she could safely leave the room, or she believed she could leave safely if she just agreed to Pearl's insanity.
Yeah.
And you see that again in Maxine when she does that intro monologue that is killer and also reminiscent of the killer monologue in this, where she says the murderous things that she's been driven to do. And then she nails it. She wipes her tears and they go, okay, can we see your tits? Like,
yeah,
that's how good the monologue was, honey. Like, do you have the body? That's this constant reminder that she is just meat.
Yeah. And that monologue though in Pearl, like me, I mean, the fact that she did that in one take, I'm like, Oscar nomination. Where the it is not like Pearl was some gory, did she gory do that in one horror take? Movie. Yeah, one take.
Jesus, I didn't know
that. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's a one-take monologue, baby. And let me tell you, the fact that she did not get like any type of Oscar nomination for that alone, and everyone's like, horror. I'm like, yeah, but Pearl wasn't your typical horror movie. Like, it was not as violent and gory as like an average horror movie. It's just, you know, this is a Ty West, this very different type of horror that is not blasting your face. It's very almost subtle, and it's used when necessary.
I mean, when he blows up the guy's head right in front of you, or she nut crushes that, like, it's not unsubtle. It's subtle in points.
She did and what she had to do to protect herself.
It contrasts. I think that's why it makes it so interesting for me, is that it is so incredibly purient, so base, so Peter Jackson, and then it is nuanced and subtle and referential, and it's like, it can be both of those things. Why does it have to be one to be valid? And I enjoy the hell out of that.
Yeah.
I think X would have worked better if they had a higher budget for me. Like, I think some of what didn't exactly work for me in X is that it's genuinely impressive to do as much as they did with $1 million.
Let's talk about that budget. Yeah.
But like, I do think that there's a lot of things that they kind of rush through in X. You could tell that it's because budget, right? Like, there's a lot of like kill shots or something where it's like, oh, like Jenna Ortega just running outside and then getting got, like, and you see it from a distance, and it's like, I feel like this would have you know, if you had like another camera that you were doing at the same time.
She also did a scene, and like, a lot of people felt uncomfortable about that because she was like 20 and he's like 35, and I'm like, guys, she doesn't actually do the fucking scene, they just allude to her doing the scene.
I do think I was thinking about this today when I was taking like a short bike ride, but I do appreciate the fact that a lot of times in like these older movies, right? Like, you'd have like the camera girl or somebody that's like kind of virginal, I guess. And they're the one that's the final girl. And they're like, it's almost like a reward for not having sex the entire time that they don't get got, right? Like, and I mean, that goes back to our like deepest fears with sex and death kind of intertwined.
That's why
and, like,
the I'm third not... movie's called Puritan 2. Sorry.
Yeah. But I'm not like, and I'm not shitting on that, you know, that's done in a lot of things, but like a lot of times it's the most virginal girl that ends up being chosen as the final girl. And I liked that in X, it was literally like the least of the virginal girls, the one that was literally like a pornographic actress that ends up being the final girl. And
the first one to go is the virgin dude, like the cinematographer who didn't have sex.
Yeah. And then, you know, they also don't do the, in any of these movies, they don't do like the black guy's the first to go trope. Like, they make sure that they know, like Kid Cudi is not the first to go. But I also would have used Kid Cudi for as long as I could on screen if I was.
Yeah, because he's not bad. He's pretty good as an actor.
Yeah. He's also just he's Kid Cudi. Really, like,
yeah.
I saw him, I'm like, that's Kid Cudi. You can't fool me.
And I think you hit the nail on the head with why the budget is a little bit better in Pearl than it is in X. X has a lot of special effects, and I have to say, I think that Mia Goth did a fantastic job in all of these, acting under that much prosthetics, but that's going to cost a lot of money, and the cast is twice as large, so that's going to cost more money. So like, they kind of pare it down in Pearl, and that's where the budget really works well, because even by the time we get to Maxine, it's only $2 million. Let us not forget that this is 2022. This cost, like, the 19 times this makes Dusk Till Dawn, like 19 million to make Dusk Till Dawn in the early 90s and 1 million to make this.
With inflation, I'm sure that like the amount of that 19 million is obviously like a lot higher today in today's money. Like, this is 1 million of today's money, like, which is crazy. Like, you know, it's genuinely impressive filmmaking, you know, doing a lot for a little. It also brings kind of this very raw, almost like, I don't want to say like student film-esque, but like this very raw kind of filmmaking to it, where like you're like you're watching like somebody's project that they're kind of putting in front of you, and it's like there's like so many ways that could go wrong, and it's like, oh no, this fucking works. Like all three of these kind of work well despite the low budget, although I think that, you know, it would have it's a movie where somebody gets shot by an alligator.
I gotta be honest. I thought Maxine was a little bit rushed. I'm like, you know, I mean, the pacing was a little bit too fat. Like, you know, Coda's always like, I like a movie that's under 2 hours long. Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, this movie, Maxine, in my opinion, was too short. That's what it was for me, because it was just.
I mean, I don't know about length. I think that you're right that the ending of Maxine kind of felt rushed.
Yeah,
like the suspense leading into that ending, it's like, I don't know. Oh, the dad did it. Come on, let's get this done with. I do agree with that. I don't know. I think that that's a pacing issue altogether, though. I don't know if it's the, you know, because there's a lot of Maxine that's just her like smoking and hanging out.
Yeah, it does feel like, and there's like a couple of movie video scenes in it. They're all almost exactly the same length, which is kind of impressive. They're within 3 minutes of each other. Pearl being the shortest of them. That's nice and tight. So you had talked about the use of Technicolor in here, and I feel like it's all very deliberate and very interesting and really well done. Like the red dress. Do you guys feel like the red dress is as much of a Wizard of Oz reference as I do, or just like, because red is cool and it's blood?
It is.
Yeah.
It's iconic in its own way.
Something that I was listening to Mia Goth having like a, you know, getting interviewed about this, and the original script, it was going to be black and white. It wasn't going to be Technicolor. So the entire movie would have been black and white. And then A24 said like, you can't do that. Like you can't do like a black and white movie like this. So they had to scrap the entire script they had come up with to that point and come up with something else.
Wow. Damn. It's so integral to my understanding. Like she puts on the red dress and takes back her life and tries to go into this reality. It felt exactly like putting on the red shoes for Dorothy. We're like, you had this power within you all along, Pearl. You just got to do it yourself. Like,
you murder your
that
family.
Was so good.
You gotta do it, girl.
We always talk about people taking these Wizard of Oz stories and making them grittier, but here is a perfect level of homage without being heavy-handed, without just stealing.
Mm-hmm. Maggots are not adorable little friends.
I go with a disagree, agree to disagree.
That's true, KT, because, I mean, even, like, the title looked very Wizard of Oz-esque. Even the Wicked movie, apparently a lot of early screens of the Wicked movie, the title card to Wicked is exactly replicated from the Wizard of Oz title. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a lot of homages in that respect. And also, it would have been interesting to me if it started like a sepia tone, but I feel like that would have been too obvious that it's a Wizard of Oz, heavy reference film. But
although I
think use of Technicolor.
I would have liked, I mean, imagine if it's sepia, right? And then it's her first, like, you know, you take a kill or something, and then it's her first kill, and then all of a sudden it goes into Technicolor. That would have, I mean, but I don't know. It still would have been, I think, too derivative. And I think the Technicolor works really well here. And I think that works really well here, especially because it's just off-putting enough to make you feel like you're in some kind of, like, a world full of, like, magical realism a little bit, right? Like, you're in
like a 1940s movie, like a Red Shoes type of situation. Like, you're not used to seeing a Technicolor type of film these days.
So. Like, the grotesqueness of a lot of it, right? Like, you know, how fucked up it really is when you see your parents kind of falling apart and they're, like, you know, they're sitting at the dinner table and there's, like, I feel like that would not have worked as well with regular color. Like, I feel like the hue of kind of the saturation being high enough that, like, everything is just a little bit unreal. Everything is just a little bit magical in a way. Like, I feel like that's when it really works.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it's very interesting to take that kind of Dario Argento Italian fashion horror and put it on a Texas ranch with prairie dresses and like hair that's just little braids in German style. Like it was, again, it's a very interesting way to take something and be like, I'm still putting in a layer of my own story. I'm not just being like, for example, First Omen, which literally just felt like super derivative of Argento's stuff. I really enjoyed it. Yeah. Did you guys feel like when the woman lit on fire, the German mother, that really almost like spin away the way the Wizard of Oz, which when she lit on fire, like the same exact.
I didn't even really think about that much of it. And then she puts her out with the water the same way. And then she's
scalding water. She boils her again. Because the water makes the witch in Wizard of Oz steam. So she put steaming water on her. It was this level of subtlety where you're like, damn it, bitch, you're thinking, Jesus, Ty, you're so smart.
Yes, exactly.
There's a level of like the idea of like a projectionist too, right? Like movies as kind of a form of its own form of wizardry. Like, you know, who doesn't in this world like love the guy with the projection, like with the, you know, and then you find out like not only is he not anything but just kind of a normal guy, he's kind of just a fuck boy. Like he's the bohemian. You get your own form of kind of you know, she thinks like, oh, this guy's gonna take me to Europe and we're gonna be together and all this stuff, and then he brings her back, and like when it actually hits her, like, oh no, this is just like a fuck boy that works in the projection room. Like, it's his own form of Oz moment.
Yeah, and he's like, I kind of feel like he's both the Scarecrow and the Tin Man, because I believe the Scarecrow wants the brain. No, he wants the heart. The Tin Man wants the brain, right?
The Scarecrow wants the brain and the Tin Man
was more like the wizard to me, because he was a bit of you know, the realization he was just a fuckboy and not some great educated guy who's gonna, you know, travel the world with her and blah, 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 blah.
I felt like he was giving her the gift of a brain. He was this bohemian man who introduced her to these bohemian ideologies, and that her life mattered in a way that she didn't think it could have possibly. And by giving her an opening up her mind, he kind of broke her. Like, she wasn't really ready to be. He broke her heart by giving her a brain a little. Yeah. I do almost feel like the father himself could have been the Great Oz, because he was this big figure who was reduced to this like man in a chair who couldn't be what you wanted him to be. You know, like there was so many people could have been more than one person as well.
I don't think that there's like necessarily like one-to-one allegories in all of this, but I do I do think that it has a very Ozian feeling to a lot of it. Like, I think that you know, just how kind of cynical at the same time as being like you know, having like this magical realism to a lot of it works that way. Like just like the alligator as like a figure in this, that
you mean Toto the alligator.
I think that, number one, I mean, obviously it just gives a backstory for why she can call the alligator up at random during, you know, during, but it's still such a, like a freakish thing, right? Like she has like a book of tricks or whatever. And, you know, I think the scene that's most suspenseful in the entire movie is when you're waiting for Theta to, you know, to actually devour her dad. And then the mom catches her and wheels the dad back. And obviously, like, the mom must know what's happening. Like, she must see that the gator's coming up to him, and she's just holding the dad out in front of the water. And it's like, she has like this merciful angel of death thing going on, but it's like, that's the least merciful way to go.
Just give him all the morphine. And even the alligator's name, Theta, which you see again later in Maxine when she's standing on the star for Theta Bar, who's a famous exotic actress, central actress, like, God, everything means something.
Yeah,
I didn't even think of that. Yeah, like that's, and she comes out of the same tradition of silent films as, you know, Pearl's watching on screen when the guy's showing her the dirty French film. She's like, wow, he's so woke, but really he's just trying to fuck.
Every single time I would stop to be like, why is something something? I kept seeing that image. Christina's World from Andrew Weymouth, that very famous painting that you see in like every doctor's office, where there's the house in the distance and the woman sitting in the grass. I never really stopped to ask what that painting is about. And apparently it's about a disabled woman with a degenerative muscle disorder who would crawl across her farm. And like, she was refused to accept the life that she did not deserve. And she lived to be this inspiration. And the painting is used to represent like psychological determination. And boy, shit, well, that's Pearl. Yeah, that's Pearl. Yeah. She refuses to accept her limitations, genetic, mental, whatever. She's going to live that life she deserves. God,
yeah. I just hate how her mother's like, you got to be happy with what you got. And I'm like, oh my God, you got to try to strive for a better life, lady. Like, But, I mean, but her mother's mental too, because she finally had that break and yelling at her about how she's like, mm-hmm. I'm taking care of a baby and not a man. My husband's a man that I love.
There's something like quintessentially like immigrant, like European immigrant in like the old days about that though, right? Like the idea that, oh, well, you know, we're making the best lot of life that we can on this farm. And in Germany, maybe we wouldn't have even had like a property like this, and we need to make the best of it, and we need to stick to family. And there's a very, like, there's the struggle that's always happening between the Americanized children that are like, I'm going to leave this farm. I'm going to be something, you know, nothing can stop me. I've been, you know, I've been injected with the American dream straight into my forehead or something. And then the mother or like the immigrant parents that are like, we need to just sit and work this plot of land. That's what we've even lived for in the first place, just to own this plot of land. And that pull, like that tug, and the, you know, it definitely is like a inherent part of like, you know, the American story.
Yeah, plus there's
Well, I want to add too is that a lot of African Americans who had parents that grew up during Jim Crow, they were incredibly strict and maybe even, you know, you could say like abusive. But that's because that's how they were raised. You know, they knew that, you know, they were African American. You know, they didn't have rights at all, so they had to you know, make with what they got, and you know, it toughened them up. And unfortunately, sometimes, you know, it did not pass on to the kids.
And that's a perfect example of this coming from a place of safety and love, where her mother is almost like, she's very naive. She doesn't even know that she can go to this audition, and it doesn't fucking matter if she can dance or not, and she's going to get her heart broken. And her mother knows how bad she is at dealing with her emotions. So that, like, when my nieces come to me and they say they want to be actresses, I know how hard it is to do that and how cruel the industry is. Do I want to encourage them? Or do I want to discourage them and save them that pain that I know will be part of the journey? It is almost loving that Pearl's mother is trying to say, like, don't do this.
Yeah.
I don't want you to be sad.
But she's also playing the stereotypical unloving, cold German immigrant mother at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's like she has no way of telling her.
She has coping skills of someone from like 1800 Germany.
At the time when it's hardest to be a German immigrant, like there's a psychological distance, you know, with like German immigrants during this time period where everybody was considered like, you know, you're just going to be helping out other Germans, you know, and fighting the war effort. And people like German immigrants that had a farm would have stuck face down at the ground, like, you know, just working and making sure that the government didn't come and either throw them in a literal internment camp or you know, like suspect them of something and send them back. Like this was a time where the paranoia and the alienation of a German immigrant was, you know, through the roof, and that adds the layer of this. But then, you know, Mia Goth, like as Pearl, like has no real connection to that, right? Like it's not like she's ever been, like I doubt like the mother had her in Germany.
With the isolation, because, you know, the mother's very afraid of getting the Spanish flu because her husband got it. Notice, of course, the pig, the in-laws, you know, Walters, you know, the blonde, they come by to check in on them, give them stuff. And the mother's like, no, nine infected with germs, nine, you know, like there's some generosity towards them, despite, you know, the immigrant status and how cold the mother is. She won't accept, you know, any kind of generosity. While at the same time, she's like, do you know what it's like being an immigrant? Like, it's
there's layers.
Again, it's the fear of the pandemic and just the isolation getting to them.
Well, there's layers of psychological class and, I mean, I'm not going to say race, but like ethnic psychological drama going on between all of this, because, you know, presumably like Howard's family or whatever, they're rich, they're WASPs or, you know, like presumably, right? Like they're probably like the highest people in this town. And, you know, the German immigrants are kind of the lowest. This is the middle of World War One. They're kind of pushed to just working on this farm. And there's a certain amount of resentment, I'm sure, towards, I mean, with Pearl, but also with the mother, towards like these people that are like, oh, we'll just drop you off a ham to make sure
suckling pig.
Yeah. And there's those. So those are layers of like psychological tension that I think are portrayed really well within this movie.
Yeah. And I think you see that mirrored in the accent choices that Pearl has. When we start, she's almost like breathy, very Dorothy, very fake, very not how anyone talks. And it's subtle and it starts to settle in a little bit more and become more of a Texas accent. And she can go straight into that German accent with her mother, but she's not going to let any of that come through when she talks to anyone else. She wants to be seen as American very much. And that's definitely coming out ahead when you look at Howard and his family, who don't have to put on that affectation of speech.
Yeah.
And also the fact that Pearl understands her mother completely in German, knows every word. And that's interesting too, because it reminds me of one of my aunts. When my mom and aunts and uncles were very young, they knew German. And that was their first language, but they don't remember much of it. But my oldest aunt was well known to, someone would speak to her in German. They were bilingual, of course, and she would just talk back to them in English. And that would drive everyone nuts. They're like, just speak it in German. You understand it? Speak back in German. She's like, no, I'm going to speak back in English.
Well, see that in this movie? Does Pearl ever speak German? I think she only ever speaks English, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the mother speaks to her in German. So
yes.
It would be funny if she didn't speak any German. And she was just like, I don't know what this bitch is saying to me. But like my grandmother was German, like, you know, from Germany. Oma. And she had this, like, she had the same kind of head down, don't really, like, you know, keep to yourself, just kind of do your own stuff in the house, don't get too close to people, like, don't, you know, that same kind of feeling. And I think that it definitely came through from the fact that she came here from Germany after World War II.
Yeah, same with my Uma.
Yeah,
there's a she would hate it. She hated it when there would be TV commercials about the encyclopedia. My pop-up, who's also German, but he wasn't born in Germany. His parents were, would say, when there was like mention of Adolf Hitler, to my mom and aunt, that's your uncle Adolf. And my Uma would get so mad, because again, she when she was a toddler, she had to hide in churches, and a lot of the nuns had to hide the Jewish babies, like keep them so close to them that they almost like killed them. Like, that's a common story that she would tell. Like, it's not easy being someone who was German post like the World Wars, is what, you know, this movie does a really good job to explain it to.
Yeah, and this is like this is the war, even the one before Hitler, you know what I mean? Like, this is when they were putting up the posters that were like down with the Kaiser, that they had all over America.
That's good rolls. It's great for a sandwich. Get off his ass.
Oh, that's actually good, you know, about the parallel between now and then, like, especially with the Spanish flu and, of course, COVID. I mean, I don't feel like people understood the messaging of this movie. It's like, you know, isolation is, isolation is bad. Like, if we had just tried to stop the spread for 2 weeks, maybe it wouldn't have been so bad, guys. Find a hobby, bake some bread, start streaming, just do something for 2 weeks. You can't be home for 2 weeks. You really need to get your highlights done. Like, come on, people.
Although I would say that Pearl had stuff going on with her well before the Spanish flu, okay?
Yeah.
She's like, I'm just killing small animals, MBD, you know, whatever. Here's a goose for my alligator. Like, I don't think the being alone was what got to her.
Well, in this show, COVID did bring people's brains. I mean, I know people who think that their litter box is at SRS now, and I'm like...
I think that she was probably showing signs of, because it's like classic psychopathy, right? Like, it's classic, you start killing small animals and then you end up killing larger animals and then you kill people. And, you know, like that kind of thing you see with serial killers. Of course, this is a serial killers for the girlies, you know, but I think that when there were more people around, probably she was masking it better, is what I got the feeling from her whole thing with it, right? Like, there's people around, and of course, like, there's the whole thing for this character in particular, that she gets like so horny she kills, and that's like her MO. But like, and I don't know if that's the case with normal psychopaths, but there's you know, like, her husband went away.
I love that you're leaving the door open just in case, though.
I mean, maybe. I mean, I don't know. I don't know too many. I hope.
Yeah.
Maybe I do. I don't know. Who would know? But like, there's the whole thing with, you know, everybody kind of went away and her husband went away and like her, her, she was kind of delusionally wrapped up, I guess, in the idea that her husband was just going to take her away to live with his family. And then, and that's the class in like ethnic thing again,
right?
Like,
horny too. Like, where's my husband at? It's been like 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's kind of,
yeah.
There's an interesting parallel, that like juxtaposition, where Pearl really wants to be saved and is so angry at Howard for not saving her. And then in X, Howard kind of like takes care of and feeds her almost like she's an alligator. But Maxine literally says she doesn't want to be saved. She's going to save herself. I think that's why they make a good combination of sides of a coin to show to us.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why it's perfect. And it's a perfect, like, you know, when she is so drawn to the character of Maxine, it's like, this is what you could have, you know?
Yeah.
You could have been a porn star.
I mean, she could have been on one of those French movies.
Yeah, exactly.
So I grabbed a few of the clips that I found.
I love her voice. It's so cute.
Yeah, where she's getting interviewed for the, I don't know if it's for like the features of the movie or whatever, or, yeah, so this is about the writing of it, and I thought this, because I really liked that they let Mia Goth help write this one.
Came about at the very beginning. Awesome. It was somewhat of a joke. At the very beginning of all of this, when I first signed on to X, Ty and I were talking a lot every single day about Maxine and Pearl and the connection between those two women, and within those conversations, this idea just started to form, somewhat as a joke at first, I guess, because we never like really believed that this could happen. It was just this fantasy that we had of doing a prequel to Pearl.
Well, another cool thing about the Pearl character and Mia playing both roles is that, you know, while we were developing that and while we were figuring out Pearl's backstory, it just sort of bloomed into something like, you know, far more three-dimensional than we anticipated. So it was very easy to reference things for her when she was in character, of like what she's feeling and why. And that just opened up like a lot of ideas for the both of us. And it opened up the possibilities to like, you know, expand on the character a lot more. And that was really exciting and made for an opportunity to do something that like, I think neither of us had ever done before.
People pay an arm and a leg to see this. Pictures like this are gonna revolutionize the industry. And I, for one, plan on capitalizing early.
And he started asking me questions, and I would remember I would, you know, like be doing my groceries, and he sent me texts like, oh, what do you think a really cool idea for a story would be, like can you just like send me ideas for like scenes that you've envisioned or that you've always wanted to do or like be a part of. For a little while, it was just a way to kind of prep and understand older Pearl's backstory more. And over time, that morphed into a script. But at the very beginning, it was just, I guess, like two just very excited people about the project that we had on our hands, and the fact that we were in New Zealand, and the global situation at hand with coronavirus, and the fact that we had these amazing sets. And it just felt to us that everything was in place for a prequel to be possible.
Well, I think what Pearl sees in Maxine is herself. I think she sees a time in her own life when she had a chance to go be someone else, because I think Pearl also grew up not wanting to be the person living on this farm in Texas.
One day you'll never see me again. That's right, Charlie. Farm life may be it for you, but it sure ain't for me. I'm special.
And I think she sees Maxine at a precipice of about to maybe leave that behind, and I think she's very envious of that. And I think that that makes her obsessed, because I think that really brings up all of the regret and resentfulness that she's been holding on to for all this time.
Please, I'm a star! We wrote the script over maybe like a 6-week period. It was pretty quick.
I think it's great when actors participate in the development of a story. I think a lot of actors have great perspective to add to their characters, but also just from the perspective of an actor. So that was one thing. The fact that Mia had contributed to the writing process was something that was just generally interesting about the project and something that I felt like I wanted to be involved in.
By the time I got to X, I had a pretty solid backstory created for Pearl. And by the time we started filming Pearl, the Pearl script had already been written. So a lot of that was informing my prep for older Pearl. So I always, you know, at the back of my head, like, just thought, well, you know, if worst case scenario, if for some reason that this wasn't able to happen, at the very least, it would have been a tremendous character prep study for older Pearl, and it did help me immensely.
Pearl is someone who's, like a lot of people, has a lot of regrets in life and laments a lot of things, didn't take as many chances as she could, maybe, you know, caved into rejection a few too many times and accepted things she didn't want to accept.
So relatable. That's why I love this movie so much.
Yeah, there's a relatability and like a pathos to that character that's, I feel like, has to be very hard to create in like a person that's basically like a psychopathic serial killer.
Yeah.
It's like hard. It's hard. I think Mia Goth manages to sell it because she's so damn cute, but like,
and she's so adorable. Also, apparently they said that she was like abusive on set, but apparently the guy was a piece of shit that she was like,
oh, that's where she kicked. That's where the guy claimed that,
yeah, but then shit came out about him being like a creeper and shit like that. So I'm like, oh, okay. Never ever go after my girl. She just had a birthday, okay? She was born in October, so it's like perfect for her to be a freaking Scorpio or Libra.
Yeah.
Perfect new horror queen.
I mean, I think people, she has a kid with Shia LaBeouf, right? Like, I feel like it's very easy to go after the two of them at this point as like, you know, for a payday or something.
Yeah,
but I do think what the clip is saying is that this piece feels a lot more elevated and feels a lot more lived in because Mia Goth went and did all of that extra work without even knowing that it would really pay off. She invested in these characters way more than most people would in a film that is going to get referenced in, say, like the same breath as Brain Dead or any of the New Zealand horror films. So, like, I think she also often gets spoken about with, like, sweet, Nell Tiger Free, and then the woman that you really like, Sweeney, or something like that. Sydney Sweeney. And I think that she's just a little bit better than the two of them because there's just a lot more of this going on. She's working on the role, I think, a little bit more. I don't want to push them down to pull her up. I just feel like she is really bringing a lot and kind of bringing herself up.
Can I say that really quick? It's pretty crazy that like this is her first starring role. Like, I mean, X is.
Yeah.
Like before that, she was only kind of either a bit role or like a supporting actress in everything, every role that she had played.
It speaks to her approach of acting on a core level.
And like, you know, mentioning Sydney Sweeney, the funny thing about Sydney Sweeney is that she's trying to get more of her projects produced. Like a lot of these actresses now, like this generation of like late 20s, early 30s actresses are co-writing scripts, are trying to find good directors and try to produce films, which is good. We need more of that. You know, this is why it's we're seeing more better women led projects because a lot of these young women are taking, you know, like they're actually dedicated to more women led projects because we see what happens when it's where a director, a male director, does not, you know, get notes from like a female star. Like it's clear that you know that Ty West and Mia Goth worked hand in hand with all three of these movies.
I also think it's interesting that I noticed this watching it again today. Kid Cudi, you know, like Scott Mescudi is like his actual name. Like he actually produced X and he produced this movie. He was listed as producer, which I wonder if the low budget meant that, you know, it was actually more rather than getting paid like, you know, what he probably would get paid as Kid Cudi, you know, to be in being a producer and getting a portion of whatever comes through it, like the box office probably worked better for him.
Points on the back end. Yeah. That's always a better deal.
Yeah. So I wonder if that's kind of the deal that he struck with Ty West being like, look, this is only $1 million movie, but I'll come on as producer and I'll produce this. And Mia Goth produced this one as well. And Mia Goth produced Maxine.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just amazing how fast all three of those films came like back to back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They were very efficient. And also, Mia Goth was doing Infinity Pool with one of the Skarsgård brothers. So that was fun. That was a good movie, too.
And they point out something kind of interesting in this film that feels like they're talking about Mia Goth's career in and of itself, where the British actress in Maxine is talking about how, like, if they want to be taken seriously as an actress, she has to get outside of horror. And it feels almost as if Mia Goth is saying, like, no, watch me. Because the monologue that she does in the end of this is transcendent, relatable, subtle, really just grips you. If you weren't already gripped into this movie, I feel like that's the point in which you just totally get taken into the story and really feel for this woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, a comment. This year has been amazing for women directors. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. Coleman, I saw the TV Glow, The Substance, and Humanist Vampire.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost a change.
Yeah. Like, it will. What will happen is society will often marginalize a group so badly that they start telling stories through the horror medium, and you will see, like, oh my God, Roe v. Wade got repealed, and then all of a sudden there's all these women heart. Yeah, yeah. For anybody who wants to say that art is not political, like, bless.
I saw the video where Harry was going off on that.
I love when Harry goes off on that. He's so right, though. He's so right.
You were such a great guest to talk about In a Lonely Place. But I think that it's, I like the idea that the artists are now kind of either ending up co-writing, co-directing, directing, or getting a producer's credit so they have actual say over the projects. Like,
self-funded.
Yeah. I like that.
And that means that overall you can do a lower budget film, like you're saying. So Kid Cudi will take points on the back end, and this movie can cost 1/19th what a movie in 1993 might have cost. You can also do it in New Zealand, where the Cultural Council is going to provide a certain amount of the money. It's amazing, because I thought Ty West was from New Zealand. He's not.
He's American. Yeah.
Yeah. So the decision to film all three of these films in, I believe it's Southern, or was it Northern New Zealand?
I think it was Wellington. The North Island. Yeah,
in North Island. Okay.
They must have a nice, maybe they got like a good like contract going where they can film films there on a certain budget, like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well,
and they were using the Avatar crew, who was just there, so that made sense as well. Yeah. As you said in your awesome startup clip.
Yep. It had zero COVID at the time. That was another big thing. Like, literally part of the thing is you had to going to New Zealand, right? You had to quarantine for 2 weeks in a place, and then you could be, you could join everyone in New Zealand, because at the time there was literally nobody with COVID, and they had somehow managed that. They had put up the gates, but not like so much that nobody was allowed there, but so much that they had like a whole quarantine process that everyone had to go through. So the Way of Water crew was already quarantined. They're like, hey, since you're here, which is the same way I feel like this movie got put together. Like, hey, since we're here anyway, you know, like, we have our set.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
That's so brilliant. That really, really is. I feel like every time I hear new stuff about New Zealand, I'm like, well, you are just about to lose me to New Zealand, guys. Yeah. I can still do this from New Zealand, because I might just.
I really like that a lot of the people in this movie are just kind of local talent they found in New Zealand too. Like, it's like I was looking at even
except
the
for
guy
Superman. Like,
yeah, well, they flew him in, but or, you know, I don't know. Yeah,
maybe
I don't know,
he flew himself in. He's Superman.
Yeah,
yeah. Take that, Snyderverse.
But I liked I was looking up the one guy that was like, you don't have that X factor. We're looking for someone with that X factor. That guy.
Yeah.
He had been in Return of the King. He had been in The Frighteners and King Kong as just like a background guy, which I liked. I was like, damn, they really did find both German parents as well, who did a real good job as German immigrants, right? Like, they're both local New Zealand actors. And the mom actually said this was her first horror movie she'd ever been in.
That's she was good. She was really good, and she wasn't even German. That's a great. Everybody did such great accents in this movie.
Yeah.
And like when you first turn it on, I forgot how fake the accent is right at the beginning and intense. And I had this moment of like, oh my God, did I forget that this gets better? And boy, how everybody fucking nails it. It's so funny that you said that about that. Because when I went to New Zealand, I like everybody I met had in some way worked on Lord of the Rings, like no matter who they were. I went and took a horseback ride with some guy randomly, and he's like, yeah, the horses you're riding on, they were in the movie too. I'm like,
yeah, the Lord of the Rings horses. This is the horse of the ring.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I
needed a lot of horses.
there's like a whole like crew, I think, of people that have previously worked in Peter Jackson movies that are, you know, just live there full time and
just in case if he needs them.
Yeah.
You can do worse. That place is fantastic.
Yeah. But it's like, it's cool that like, well, the first, I mean, X, you know, like they flew in all kind of American actors for the most part. And then Jenna this Ortega. Movie, yeah. And then this movie is all like, you know, it's just all local. New Zealand. Yeah. Local talent mm-hmm. they found.
Yeah. And what's interesting about like Maxine is obviously since they, I guess they probably had more of a budget for it. They were able to like shoot downtown Hollywood. Oh my God. I saw that too. I was trying so hard not to laugh.
Sorry to interrupt you, Christina. That would have been awful.
I know.
Yeah.
She's even got Halsey can act, and I love her. Like,
yeah. So all three of these are filmed in New Zealand. Even Maxine is filmed in New Zealand.
Oh wow!
Yeah, they are.
Damn, they must have like sets that they can use to make it look like we're like in downtown Los Angeles.
They built the Bates French house.
I always have a soft spot for Halsey because a few months after Michael died, she posted his Michael's his Israel clip, and it got like over a million retweets or whatever, and we were all like, shit, like, damn, that's like, you know, now that he's passed away, like even like famous people are starting to look at his work.
Well, speaking of the Bates Hotel, I don't know if you guys noticed, there's so many references to, you know, someone's in the window of the house. And they're looking at a distance. We see it in X. We see it in Pearl. We see it in Maxine.
Yeah.
Because Maxine thinks she sees Pearl. Like there's so many references to, you know, Psycho as well. Like, it's not just a Wizard of Oz, but there's also, like, Psycho. I mean, you can see so many references to so many different, like, you know, classic horror films or even, like, The Wizard of Oz or, like, Siegfried Follies and stuff like that. So, like, that was something that I was paying attention to when I rewatched the films. Recently again, because I rewatched them like twice.
Yeah, there's just an abundance of graphic matches for people if you're paying attention, regardless of what your predisposition to certain things are. You could only know The Wizard of Oz and still get 90% of this. You could only know Hitchcock and still get an incredible amount of this. I love the people who have done the side by sides where they show you the scenes together. It's And again, it's done in a way that doesn't feel like, oh shit, that's literally just on both screens. It's referential. You're like, oh, I can see how that evolved into what we're watching here. And I appreciate that difference, even if it is subtle.
Yeah. I look forward to seeing what Mia Goth does next, because I'm like, does the story have to be over? Like, we should have a movie about Pearl and Walter, you know, living on that farm, and maybe they lure people into the farm and they just murder people together. Like, is it so interesting to see, like you point out, KT, about how, you know, Walter, you know, Howard's his name, Howard was like, you know, I'll kill these people for you, I'll do whatever you want, you know, Pearl, like, I'll do whatever you want. And it's crazy because, you know, he just accepts her. Maybe it's because he saw a lot of shit when fighting in the war.
It's this, I would rather be war with this woman than alone. Yeah. It's almost like as if you did enough Mice and Men and he doesn't kill any. Like, it's just let him keep being a monster. You know, or even in Dusk Till Dawn when the brother and the two brothers face off and he has to kill his brother. It feels like, well, what if they don't, and they just keep feeding them that for forever because they can't make that decision. Both of them are waiting for something else to do something for them, to reward them for their work when they really need to do it themselves.
Yeah. Hey, wifey, the sun's getting real low.
I think that also, I mean, I think that the point about the war makes sense too, right? Like, you have to have just come in from a world of carnage, and then you see carnage, and like, you have to wonder if he walked into the house after, you know, a war didn't happen and after he didn't experience that, like, would the reaction be the same? I mean, you know, we'll never know that, but it's a moment of such carnage. It's almost like, you know, you wipe your hands of it and you're like, look, I'm back now. This is, at least I get to supervise it. I mean, I don't know. I'd love to see a movie in between where he's like reckoning with the fact that not only her own parents, but like his sister is now dead and like,
So do you guys see... Mia Goth doing more horror? Or, I mean, I'm not even sure, she might have listed movies which she's going to be doing next. Or do you see her, I mean, she's very, very talented, both writing and acting, going for maybe more mainstream to try and break out of being stuck as seen as a scream queen when really is a very good actress.
I would hope that she did more horror. I mean, you know, even
Frankenstein. Even, she's gonna be in Frankenstein.
Oh, okay.
One of her first, you know, her first credits that wasn't one of these movies, right? She was in Suspiria, like the remake of it. Like, so I feel like, I feel like it's almost like, I hope anyway, that like her, the fact that she's been in so many, yeah. So Frankenstein is what she's working on right now, and Blade. That's in development.
Yeah.
Oh, she, awesome.
She was also in a movie, a British like comedy, drama period called Emma with Anya Taylor-Joy, who's also kind of like another, like, you know, she looks like she could do well in like horror movies because she's got like that vampire gothic look to her, because her wedding was like a gothic Catholic like escapade, and I'm like, I dig that.
The chats do point out that, like, oh, Frankenstein and Nosferatu in the same period. Yeah, I guess that's how executives, that's how green lights work. It does feel a little ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, at least
Boston movies are back, baby.
it's not the same, like, you know, I mean, at least it's not Nosferatu and Dracula around the same time, right? Like, I think they're trying to bring back the Universal Monsters style, like, film right now.
They're doing a Wolfman movie, too, right? I think they are,
And if we're talking about a period of time where women in horror is going to start being big, like, yes, Frankenstein is, when you think women, you think horror, you think Frankenstein. That should be pretty much first where you go.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm excited. I mean, that we're entering a new, you know, you kind of have to thank Trump for making overturn, because now, look, we're getting good horror movies again, particularly with women, women-led projects.
I can't believe I want to be like, as a woman who does horror movies, who love women horror movies, I feel like I did not consent to that trade. Silver lining, but also, ooh, I would give it back. Can we return? Did we keep the receipt?
No, what I was saying with Texas Chainsaw is, I think X is their version of
X is the Texas Chainsaw.
X is definitely, it's really hard to keep the graphic, the matches between those two films separate, because it's the same exact set and it's shot the same. It's just the saturation kind of different at certain times. And when they use that camera to be like, we are POV, the porn camera, it really, really feels like you're watching the like a season one.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what movie Maxine is like.
Maxine is a lot like those 80s horror slasher, like pre-birth, like a Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, I would say, is within that spectrum. And there's, I do think it ends almost, with...
There's something almost like Ryan Murphy feeling about Maxine I wasn't really vibing with. We're always like, in every Ryan Murphy TV show, right? There's like, I'm gonna take you away to the 1980s. Now, here's a song from the 1980s that you all recognize.
God, I hate when they do that. Like, this song might as well be like, it is the 80s. Don't forget, this time is the 80s.
Yeah, Maxine was kind of gay.
I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah,
this yellow Italian yellow.
I think all of them have this thread of Italian horror, because I think that's really important to Ty West. I wouldn't say that was maybe the most direct reference. It does feel like he's doing this kind of, like in Ulysses, Joyce did this thing where every single chapter was in a different style of writing so that he could show off that he could do it, because he's being pompous and he could. And this feels like Ty West is trying to be like, I can do a decade generational American horror, and each one of my films will be next, and each one of them will be within the franchise, and each one of them will reference each other. And I feel like Maxine ends in a way where we are seeing her about to move on to maybe being a female director of other actresses, and having to again deal with this, like, what do I do when I'm not the star and someone else is going to be the star? Can I nurture them? And it'll probably be in that kind of like Wes Craven, Scream, mid-90s, early aughts American horror resurgence, if I were to make a prediction.
Oh, 80s exploitation sleaze flicks like Savage Streets, Class of 1984, horror, erotic thriller flicks. That's definitely all in there.
Yeah.
I think that
absolutely.
there's a brand of like 1980s kind of like just pop culture in general too. That's like over the top. It's camp. Like I feel like in Maxine was when they officially brought in like camp as a thing, yeah. Right? Like, because I feel like they kind of touched it a little bit when they did X a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like I think he really nailed the whole camp aesthetic when he did Maxine more than the other two.
Yeah,
which is probably why I connected it to Ryan Murphy in my brain, because he's like the camp guy. Like,
yeah, I do love the fact that Giancarlo Esposito, you know, was in Maxine. He played like the best agent. Like, yeah, I'll kill a guy for you. So what? Like that's the agent we all
real need. Agents won't do that shit.
Yeah, that was a very interesting casting, and I thought he was fantastic.
He's also doing a lot of horror stuff too, like playing like villainous, you know, characters and stuff like that too. So like it's like there's like now we're in a class where there's different generations of actors who are fine with doing horror, because a lot of people used to think if you did horror movies you were not a legitimate actor, actress, you know, that's like a stain on your career. But now it's like everyone wants to be in these types of movies again because they're actually making really good, you know, movies. They got heart, they got character, they got soul, they got humor, and they got some good, you know, horror to go with it.
There's
and
also
it's so funny.
I really appreciated Maxine when they're in the video store and they're having like that conversation. They bring in like the difference between like Marilyn Chambers, who was, you know, was in Rabid, the David Cronenberg movie, like the lead, who was originally like a porno actress that ended up crossing over into horror. And then she's like, yeah, I want to be more like Brooke Shields. And he's like, well, Brooke Shields, you know, has never, he's like, well, it's not like she's ever had sex on camera. And Maxine's like, yeah, but she was naked on camera. And I feel like they're really leaning hard into the point about, you know, the differences between number one, horror as a genre not being taken seriously, and so somebody like Maxine crossover, but also like porn as a category separate from whatever film is, like, you know, pop culture and film, and like those categories actually not being as spread out as, you know, Hollywood would lead you to believe. And on top of that, horror as its own form of that, right? Like exploitation and like the differences and similarities between all of those
And literally what Christina has just said about don't let, you know, horror be a stain on your, that could be said about pornography.
Yeah.
That is the parallel that keeps being made here. It's like, don't let yourself stay in porn and not become an actor. And that's why they feel like, oh boy, do they mesh together well.
Yeah. If you think about 1985, the golden age of porn ended in 1984. So that's another reason why Maxine, she's like, I'm getting older, but it's also because, you know, the golden age of porn is over. There's no need for her. Porn is kind of like, like VHS has become the new thing now. So there's no reason to go to porno theaters and stuff like that. So not only is she getting old, like she's turning 33, but I'm assuming the MILF category was not really a thing back then. But also too, her time, the time, the golden age is over. She has to move on.
Yeah, which is why there was so much, you know, they obviously watched like Boogie Nights before before X, and like they referenced that a lot. And that time where anyone can make it in porn now. And I mean, it's still like they still could to an extent, but you can just bring the porn home, or you watch the porn at home, and the budgets go way down, right? Like they're not even trying to create like scenarios anymore. Like this kind of idea of like porn as its own type of filmmaking, where it's like over the top, and there's a little bit of like you knock on the door and you're like, hey, you know, I'm coming to this
the cable
like,
guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I know a lot of people who work in the industry now, and they're producing like big budget like movies with like storylines and stuff like that, because paid premium ships now are the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the stories are wild, but like good acting overall. You know, these people could, you know, make it in the mainstream. I mean, what someone did in Zach and Miri Make a Porno, that one actress, I forgot what her name was. She played another porn actress, but like I always wondered if Pearl has succeeded, what do you guys think? Would she have been on vaudeville? Is she just like, I feel like she doesn't have the same drive that Maxine had. Like Maxine actually worked, was driven, but Pearl might have half-assed it.
I think Pearl is a sociopath who would have killed other people the second anybody took anything from her. Maxine killed in defense. Pearl said she liked to kill. It felt good.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where I was talking about, like, the psychopathy kind of thing. That you know, like, but I think this movie is kind of teasing it out. Well, all three of these movies are kind of teasing it out. Like, when is it like, oh, I'll do anything to get to the top, and when is it pure psychopathy, where it's like, yeah, I don't think you can get to the top because you can't stop fucking killing people.
Yeah, you can't kill everybody who comes to an audition that you go to and succeed. The quote at the beginning of Maxine about being seen as a monster can't be as literal as Pearl would like it to be. Like,
yeah.
That's Betty Davis' quote.
I know, and then that's why it ends with Betty Davis's eyes, which is a great song to end on as well.
Yeah, which a lot of people, a lot of people pointed out that Mia Goth's eyes are kind of Betty Davis-esque. Like,
They're big.
Yeah. I think that's what people mean when they see Betty Davis eyes.
I mean,
they're big.
I got big eyes.
Yeah, and they're, you know, exponentially big because of the lack of eyebrows, which, you know, just kind of creates this alien face that you have to stare at. You have to anchor yourself in to get any kind of understanding. And again, even with that, like, the emotion that she is doing with her face and the subtlety, there was the scene where she's about to kill Mitzi. And she pulls back on the axe. And if you really re-watch that scene, she her muscle in her face twitches ever so slightly. And she, like, pulls her eyelid back. It is the most subtle, disgusting, beautiful, like, Jesus Christ. That was, like, a sonata level of acting in just fractions of that woman's face. She is not afraid to be beautifully ugly.
Yeah.
That's what works with Mia Goth. Like, she's beautiful, but there's this side that she could do things with her face that can make her seem very ugly and ruthless. And that's why I think she works so well in horror movies.
Well, they give her that crazy like the crow feet in Maxine, right? Like, that's
She's
aging by putting lines underneath her eyes and then kind of crow's feet on the side of her eyes, and then it really pops when she starts crying during her audition, and you know, you see that.
Yeah, it's very rare that you see an actress or actor T2B act that much with their whole face. Even someone who's been on a level of prosthetics, even when she's playing older Pearl, she is acting with her whole face. And it really shows a connection between her and the cinematographer, that he's also getting that. They're getting the angles in which you're seeing this beautiful, subtle acting. This is a group I would love to see keep making films together. Like, if they keep making horror films, they need to keep doing it together.
Yeah, I would really hope so. They're already all kind of working on other projects, I think, and it's kind of a shame.
How dare they not listen to you, KT? This is an outrage.
They started these new projects.
A fourth Maxine Pearl kind of thing, but I think that they ended up not deciding not to do that so far anyway.
That's a little, maybe a little derivative. You don't need to flog that horse, but yeah.
So should we do Letterbox? Anyone got any other
No, we could do Letterbox.
All right, so Kona's not here, so I'm in charge. So Letterbox is a place where film lovers, film haters, film curious folks gather to with each other to discuss the films they love, the films they hated, the films that they obviously believe are for the horny artistic girls. So this is a list. It's not just for Siskels and Eberts. It's for anyone to discuss, you know. It's a end all be all of movie reviews. So here are the Letterboxd one-liners for Pearl. Take it away, Forrest. This is going to be my American Psycho.
my first thought was, I was looking at it. I was like, this is the Joker for girls. Like, this is the girls' version of, you know, I mean, specifically horny artistic, but you know.
Yeah. No, I definitely think you can see this, like, both characters in Joker and this are in some way reacting to touch deprivation and a lack of ability to express sexuality, whether it's deviant sexuality that is appropriate or deviant sexuality that is maybe monstrous and concerning and would need psychological assistance. It's still deeply parallel.
Yeah.
This is basically the Wizard of Oz, but Dorothy was so horny that she started killing people.
Yeah.
Or, like, it's even the Wizard of Oz if the Twister hadn't taken her anywhere and she's just stuck.
Yeah.
Like, maybe she
if they took
yeah.
They took Toto from Dorothy and she had to live with that actual trauma and that abandonment. This is what you get.
Exactly. Don't be doing that shit. Do not interrupt the girl in her crazy, psychotic, mentally unstable monologues.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you should have just hugged her. Just hugged her instead of stepping away to the door, Mitzi. That's on you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course she's raised by German parents. You won't give her a hug either. You know?
No. Like, no.
No kidding. Mia Goth outsold Timothée Chalamet in Call Me By Your Name during the end credits.
Yes. Dude, though, she really did. That was like a very hard take to do that kind of commitment to crying and still smiling, and it was so upsetting and disgusting and appropriate.
He has her like three-frame smile that's so crazy on so many levels, too.
It's a meme now. Yeah. It's a meme.
Yeah. It's kind of how it felt after Tuesday.
Yeah. Oh my God, this girl is Clinton Servant.
That one took me a minute earlier. I was like, I get, Servant.
Yes. Clinton Servant. Yeah. I wish it was a word. It can be now.
I'm so glad I got that on one take. Okay. What did I do wrong? No! Why?
Your mic canceled out the sound.
Nope. Your mic was like, no.
Let me do that again then.
All right.
What did I do wrong? No! Why are you leaving me if I did anything wrong? I don't understand.
Yeah, your mic wasn't happy.
It's like it's got scream control where once you start screaming it cuts you out because it's afraid that it's too loud.
Or it's got scream control when once you start yelling into it,
let me do ASMR then. What did I do wrong?
You no. got
why are you leaving? Sorry.
What did I do wrong? No, why are you leaving me if I didn't do anything wrong? I don't understand. I thought you liked me. Anyway, she's not going to stay on this farm. You know what I mean? Like,
I can't help but feel like, really, in this exact moment, Pearl, this screaming thing, this is what you've done wrong. This
is when she became president.
It's also funny that she's like the most terrifying, you know, any character that looks that cute has really ever been on screen. And everyone starts backing away. And like,
but psycho.
But everyone starts backing away, and then she gets angrier because they're backing away. But it's like, bitch, you are terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
X, lots of raw dog. Pearl, lots of straw doggy.
Come on, that's great. 1,844 people can't be wrong.
Yeah.
She's straw dogs heavy in this one.
Yeah.
She came, she slayed, both quite literally.
Even she's even able to come onto the straw. Like
that's how all these forest fires are starting. You're not supposed to do that.
Those were the Letterboxd one-liners for Pearl. You can check us out, Movie Night Extra. Also Force, he's logging everything, as well as we're uploading little stories about our episodes, right?
Yeah, where do we do it every you know, when we get around to it. I also logged all three of these movies.
Nice.
Yes.
And you can find KT down there. See, I know how to do this, Conan. Down there. Right? Any movies you logged in recently?
I'm trying to catch up on all the ones I have in there. I think I just did a review on Alien. I'll be doing all three of these. I like to do my reviews after we have our conversation. This way people can't. Like they have to tune in at least, and so I'll be doing these three probably tonight and tomorrow.
You're doing that challenge where you go back and actually review movies that you've watched, right?
Yeah, I've been logging a bunch of them, so I had like 50 that I hadn't written reviews for, and so I'm going through. I'm actually down to 12. I have only 12 remaining of the original 50. And yeah, they're just mostly ones that I've done for this show. So I need to go back and remember what we talked about, and I'll watch the episode when I write the review.
Yeah.
By the way, I like that you're Pearl's unborn child right now. Like you're literally your point in the like where
you're for belly.
You're literally inside of Pearl's belly.
Yes.
And you can find me. I'm Christina. I'm going to be logging in small things like these because I saw it today, Cillian Murphy, and the fact that that movie has a higher rating than Oppenheimer means he's probably going to get nominated for another Oscar.
Did you see it? You said you saw it today?
Yeah.
Did you think it was better than Oppenheimer?
Oh, I mean, not better than Oppenheimer, but probably one of the better, like, Irish Catholic, like, related, because it's about, like, real history, too. I mean, but okay. I thought it was really good, really good. I cannot wait to see if he's got to do another Oscar campaign.
Oh, yeah. It's an easy year, too.
It's hard to, like, do better than Oppenheimer. That movie fucked.
Yeah, but this is a year where there's, like, barely anything that people can think of to nominate. Although I do think that Sing Sing should be spoken of. That's a really good one, and I think that'll get a bunch of nominations.
Yeah, I remember a while back there was Oscar buzz, like months and months and months before the Oscar season even started for that. Mm-hmm. I still haven't seen it, but it looked really good. I like Coleman Domingo a lot.
So good. So good. Oh,
Chapter Black, the first one was awesome. But I really liked the first Omen. I also loved, you know, Immaculate. I did like the fact that we got a better origin story for how Damien was made. Like how, because of how he was conceived, because there's always inconsistencies about how Damien was conceived via just a jackal, but now it's like, oh, he actually had a mother and he has a sister and blah, 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 blah. So like, I enjoyed the like nun core, the horror nun core that we got this year too.
I feel like nuns don't like nun core.
No.
I wonder why.
It's not for y'all. All right. Well, here's our plugs. If you're watching us on YouTube, please like and subscribe. And then hit the bell to get notified whenever we're streaming. And we'd humbly request that you watch the video to the end because it helps us with the algorithm and helps more film fans to discover the show. We're also monetized. If you want to get your chat questions definitely read on stream, you can always send us a super chat, which will help us keep the show going. Every cent helps. If you're watching on Twitch, you can gift us a free sub on Amazon Prime with your Prime membership, but getting subs on Twitch is always appreciated, and it helps to follow us on there as well. We also have an audio feed, which is available wherever you download podcasts, if you prefer to listen to podcasts rather than watch the stream. That's updated usually the same day we stream, but watching on YouTube and Twitch is the best way to get the show first, live as it happens. If you want to support us with a monthly donation and get access to all of our after parties forever, which go patron only after we do them, you can become a patron at patreon.com/movienightextra. Link is in the description for that. It really helps us keep the show going since we do have some expenses to make this happen. We also have a Discord community. Link is in the description for that. We sometimes watch movies we cover on there. We get into conversations about everything from film to TV shows to related podcasts. We even have a Discord channel for memes. It's really fun on there. You can find us on all the social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, Twitter, and Threads. You connect with us on all of those. Talk to us. We'd love to hear from you. Lastly, we recently made a TikTok at Movie Night Extra, where we're putting up short form clips from the episodes. Okay, passing this to Conan so he can tell you about his music and this week's Protonic Reversal. Conan, who's on Protonic this week? Well, Conan's not here, but Conan's not here, Mrs. Torrance. There's his show tomorrow is at the Cobra Lounge in Chicago. You can go to neutronfriends.com and you can get tickets there. But it's with Dead Bob Lung, Conan Neutron, and the Secret Friends. And I don't see a time here, but you know, yeah,
probably like 8 or 9.
If you're around Chicago, Illinois, you know, go see that. Conan would love to hear from you.
Nice.
Christina, what do you have going on this week?
Not that much, honestly. I've been in a funk. I was recently on the Afternoon Tune to discuss Agatha All Along and how it's a masterpiece. And that was very, very, very fun to do because all the men who kept saying, "Who is this for? Who is this for?" suddenly shut the fuck up. Also, well, I just watched, you should have said, it's for me. I basically, that's what the girls, the gays, and the nays. But also, I just watched it. I don't know. KT, do you watch The Penguin?
I do, but I have not watched the finale. I'm just a little bit behind trying to catch up with everything. I heard. Okay.
So sad. I was like, you know what? Sophia Gigante, justice for her. Okay, she did nothing wrong. Okay, that's another example of a woman who just did not deserve what happened to her.
That show has been very satisfying. I'm so glad to hear. I have and when we're done, I'll be pretty much going to watch that episode.
I still gotta watch it. It sounds really good, and then I haven't watched enough TV lately.
I keep forgetting Colin Farrell is underneath all that makeup too. I'm like, 100%. Oh, it's Colin Farrell.
I think that even if you're not into the Batman or even the DC or any of that comic IP, this is still a very satisfying show.
Yeah, I should watch it because I like all the Sopranos references that they got going on.
Yeah, you would get tons of that.
Yep.
Katie, what do you have going on this week?
Well, I've got this really cool thing going on Friday where I'm going to be on the show with Adam McKay on it. I don't know if you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got to talk about that.
The StreamYard link today.
Yes, I'm sure we'll. Yeah. I don't want to jump too hard. I'll tell you what else I'm doing, but I can't help but think about that. That is, despite the bad news that we've all had, that is the light that is keeping me going because it's going to be so much fun. I can't wait. Yeah. I also have that same exact day, an episode of my show, What If I Don't Like It, with Bonnie Burton, where she watched Interview with a Vampire. And it's a crazy episode where she showed up having already seen the movie and so there's only one part, but even still, it's Bonnie, so she spoke for 2 hours. It's so much fun.
Sometimes it's fun to break format, right? Like,
Oh yeah, format be damned. You know, she was having a really rough day because it was like Thursday of the week. So Tuesday the election, Thursday, she didn't bail on me. She still came and recorded. And we had such a fun time getting to distract ourselves from reality and talking about the stuff that we really loved that I think that really comes through in the episode. So I'm hyped to get to share that with you. Also on the day that we're going to get to talk to Adam McKay. So let's talk about that because I feel like that's the thing I want to talk about.
Yeah,
that's gonna be really fun. I mean, I don't know. I didn't plan to have an after party, but if you guys wanted to, we could.
I can't do it because my back is really messed up.
I gotta catch up on sleep. But yeah, we can talk about. I mean, we got like 30 minutes left, so it's like we're gonna have Adam McKay.
I'm excited for the Adam McKay one. I'm gonna watch Vice again before then. I think is my
I'm gonna watch the other guys again because Kavanaugh was literally the villain in that movie.
I'm going to watch Don't Look Up because I hate myself and I figured why not watch that again and feel great about everything.
We're all having questions about different movies that we've all seen but we're watching now.
Yeah.
But
talk about politics, so that should be fun too.
But, do we have a format?
We don't. Yeah, I don't think we've talked about format yet for this, so we'll figure that out. Yeah. Cool. I mean, I figured it would be like the Alex Cox one where we were kind of just all going around.
Cool.
Probably should talk about this off camera. But
sorry.
Do you have any final thoughts?
Yeah, I do. I think that this movie could easily be seen as something where you're like, it's just another one of those horror movies that the kids are into with the hot actress in it. And like, it's very interesting and very thoughtful. If you're only going to watch one of them, watch Pearl. It really is the most rewarding. But I bet when you watch Pearl, you're going to be enticed enough to watch the other ones. And it doesn't hurt to watch it in that order with Pearl first, because it's kind of how it starts. I think that Mia Goth really won me over with her performance in this, in the monologue alone. And I encourage people who haven't seen this, the few of them that there are, to do.
Hell yeah. Christina, final thoughts.
I'm a huge fan of the trilogies, but especially of Pearl. Pearl's the best one of all the three. I love the tributes to like The Wizard of Oz, Follies, Psycho even. It's a phenomenal film co-written by Ty West and Mia Goth. They really had a vision and, in my opinion, succeeded. I do hope maybe we might get some more origin story types with like maybe future projects where people actually do maybe focus on like a certain villain that you wouldn't really consider. And you wouldn't really think that Pearl of all characters would have an origin story, but she does. And it works. Mia Goth was denied any awards for the performance. The monologue alone should have given her an Oscar nomination. There are people who've won Oscars for 2 minutes on screen. What the hell?
Yeah, they
even
really
a Golden
don't
Globe.
Award, like they obviously don't reward horror enough, but then a prequel that came out the same year on top of it being horror. Like, I can imagine the Academy just being like, oh, we're not going to even reward that. But like, I feel like this performance was the best out of all of the three, and they should have rewarded, if anything, like Pearl. Like, this movie was good. The other two, I mean, they're interesting, but this movie, I think out of all of them is like the one that I would
fleshed out.
Yeah. A prequel, like that took 3-6 weeks to write or something, like that's nothing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That they wrote just because she was trying to figure out what her character was doing anyway. I was going to say that, like, yeah, it's just interesting that we have another horror movie that the Academy doesn't like that is also making fun of the style, like, of making fun of acting. And it's almost like they can't be into any kind of movie that points a little bit too much the finger at how we cast people.
Which is why I'm fascinated to see if they completely snub The Substance. Because that's another movie that, you know, points the finger directly at the casting process. And it's like the only reason why anyone would take The Substance is this this complex relationship with aging that actresses have. And like literally like that movie begs to have the Academy freak out on it. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. I hope they don't, but you're right.
So Friday we'll be back and we'll be talking to Adam McKay. That should be crazy, I think. He's still one of my favorite directors. We've reviewed all of his the movies that he's directed since he went serious. We've done episodes on The Big Short. We've done episodes on Vice. We've done an episode on Don't Look Up. Nice. And, you know, Adam, please don't watch the episode on Don't Look Up because, you know, Jerry from Devo's on it and really didn't care for the movie, but...
Don't look at that movie, that episode.
Don't look up, you know.
Yeah, I still never understood the it's that movie was just making fun of like how stupid everyone is. Like, I'm like, I'm sorry, why would leftists hate this movie? It's basically the like explains like how we see these figures in the media and politicians. Why do we hate that?
And it didn't even bother to go as far as Idiocracy and try and pretend that it was like cartoonish in any way. It was like, no, it's right now. It's people now being right the way that they are. Now. Yeah.
Except
it's in the room with us right now.
With a comet heading towards us and not climate change.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm really excited for that one. That's on Friday. And then we have our episode with Marta that's next Tuesday. We're talking to her about World on a Wire. And then after that, we have two new movie episodes that we're going to be doing, where it's one of them is The Substance and the other one, why can't I think of what
Strange
it is?
Strange Darling.
Yeah. So we're going to be doing Strange Darling, and then we're going to be doing The Substance, and that's going to be right around the time of Thanksgiving. So, you know, nothing says Thanksgiving like The Substance.
Yes, like women in horror.
Yep.